Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I want to welcome you to the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Hour. I am joined Reggie will be joining us a little bit later on, but right now we have the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill. How are you doing this week?
I'm great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Doing quite well, actually. Once again, we are right here on the Blog Talk Radio, and the big announcement that I dropped actually on last night's SEC show, you guys should check that out as well, along with Jaguar Zone, which will be later this weekend. But I dropped the big bomb that we are now on iTunes. If you want to follow the show or if you want to hit that subscribe button, actually, just as well, every time we drop a new show, it'll let you download it onto your mobile device. But the best way to do it is to go to the iTunes store and search for either End Zone, all one word, or Falcon Zone, Impact Media, any of that will get you right to everything that we've done up to now. I believe it's 36 or 37 different shows. You can go back and relive all the fun times we had. What do you think about all this, Coach?
Well, I think that we're doing a great job, and I am so happy and elated and ecstatic that the fact that the show is now on iTunes gives the opportunity to reach out to a broader audience and get more people to participate in the show.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, if you guys want to go download whichever shows you would like, or if you want to hit the subscribe button and get all of them, that's even better. But we do have a ton to get to. I believe Reggie's going to join us a little later on. He's still researching some topics. Can't wait to see what he's the extra dirt he's digging up. But we'll get into some Brandon Marshall news. You know, the Cowboys and Redskins were a little busy over the weekend, but let's start with Jimmy Graham and Noah Sanders deal. Now, we all know that Jimmy Graham was deemed a tight end, whether it be political or not, those meetings. But regardless, he's considered a tight end, and instead of having to sign that franchise tender, the Saints actually gave him a 4-year, $40 million deal. What does this actually mean for the team?
Well, Jeremy, one of the things that it means for the team, it allows them to get their player. First and foremost, the deal is done. The headache is over. They don't have to worry anymore about what's going to be happening with Mr. Graham. Him getting a $40 million deal with $21 million of that money guaranteed and $13 paid in the first year allows him to escape the franchise tag. So now he gets the best of both worlds. You get your player, he gets his money, and after the time is up, he still will be young enough to move to another team if necessary and try to free agent market.
Right. And, I mean, this is actually, I mean, it's not quite the team-oriented deal that Kaepernick signed in San Francisco, but, I mean, this deal actually saves them a little bit of cap room in order so they, you know, like you were saying earlier, maybe it's bonus money, maybe it's to keep an extra player around.
Absolutely, and with the way injuries come up in the National Football League, you need that room. As we saw last year with a lot of teams and how, especially let's just take the Falcons, how injuries plague them, you most definitely want to put yourself in a position where you can go right into the market and fill and or close gaps with players at certain positions.
Right, and this deal also makes him the highest-paid tight end, not only in the league currently, but of all time, just because of the progression of things go. I mean, you know, we could compare all day as to where he fits in this. Do you consider him the best tight end today?
Right now, I would have to say yes. His numbers were there last year. I think he had 86 receptions for well over 1,200 yards and 16 touchdowns. I mean, that's a lot of productivity coming from that position. I don't think we've had a tight end with that type of productivity in our offense since the retirement of Gonzalez. But again, he's amongst company of some young tight ends that are coming up and coming along. And with that, he is starting to set a benchmark for where you have to now look at that position and have to look at it as it pertains to your salaries now.
Right. But, I'm going to have to agree, mainly because of Gronkowski's injury concerns, and Vernon Davis is dynamic, but I feel like he's maybe on the downswing now. But, this is Jimmy Graham finally getting paid, finally getting the money he really wants, and he was super smart with this, that it's only a four-year deal, because he's 27 years old right now. He'll be 21 and ready to sign another, you know, to use an NBA term, another max deal in 4 years.
Right, and his agent did a great job of making sure that he put his client in the best possible position to be able to do so. When you look at long-term deals sometimes, it looks good on paper, but over time it can become a sticky situation if you don't have the right language and the proper clauses in place so that your client can stay happy as well as the organization.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, Jimmy Graham actually had more receptions than Calvin Johnson last year, the top wide receiver in the league, which, you know, didn't really help the whole tight end debate as far as that. But, you know, as we move on from somebody who should be a wide receiver to somebody who is a wide receiver, Bears wide receiver Brandon Marshall was on NFL Insiders the other day with Adam Schefter, Chris Mortensen, and all those guys. That's a really cool show. Usually I have to watch the rebroadcast because it comes on at 3 o'clock in the afternoons, but it's really cool. And he was on there in between breaks, and I guess before they started taping, he kept mentioning to them he would like more Twitter followers. Now, this brought up the debate to me, exactly how good is Brandon Marshall, and then, you know, does Twitter followers in this day and time reflect actual talent in the league, or is it still just popularity?
Well, let's take the first part of your question. Is he a good football player? Is he good? Yes, he's an excellent football player. I think we're living in a time and the era of social media. So it allows players, and more especially just professional athletes in general, an opportunity to market themselves as their agents look at endorsement deals. Popularity plays a role in that. Now that they have social media, they can use this as a tool to show their presence and in the market amongst social media, which can then translate into some type of heavy endorsement deal for them on the other side. So, again, I think, you know, with professional athletes and the way technology is starting to mesh itself now, it's allowing room for something like that to now be used as a tool to show the marketability of an athlete.
Right. And are you on Twitter?
I am, but I must confess I don't keep up with it as much probably as I should, but I do have Twitter, yes.
Because if he needs more followers, or if he'd like more followers, then I was going to do him at least one solid or a couple solid things here. For one, at that little click of the mouse that maybe you guys heard or didn't hear right there, I'll follow you there, Brandon. And if you do want to follow Brandon Marshall, it's at B Marshall, and the B and the M are capitalized. But yeah, Twitter is another outlet for them, and it's like you were saying, it's another tool for them to, or at least more evidence of their ability to gain a fan base and stuff like that. But to me, Brandon Marshall is he's a top five receiver, I think, and on a good day, he's a top three receiver in this league. And really, the only people I would put ahead of him consistently is Calvin Johnson that we mentioned, and probably AJ Green. But if you look at what he's done over the course of his career, he's kept a lot of franchises in games they had no business in.
I agree. I mean, that's the whole idea of when you put all of the work into scouting a player, drafting a player, and developing that player into a superstar in the league called the National Football League. That's where all that comes into play. I mean, the numbers won't lie. They're consistent. They show. And again, like I said, you know, for his agent, it allows him an opportunity to go out now and find, you know, other endorsement deals and or to strengthen the endorsement deals that he currently has as a way of showing his presence in the market.
Right, and I mean, they do have Alshon Jeffrey up there, and to me, it's hard to argue that they're probably the top one or top two wide receiver tandems right now in the league, and it makes Jay Cutler's day a lot easier.
Well, when you have the ability to throw two great receivers, I'm sure it makes for a bright day, especially with
right.
as fast as defensive lineman again.
Right, and they also have Matt Forte as well as far as weapons up there, where it may not even matter who the quarterback is for Trestman up there. The Bears are going to hit hard this year.
It's going to be interesting to see.
But as we transition to a team who seems to be putting it together to a team that seems to be falling apart in certain areas, the Dallas Cowboys released quarterback Kyle Orton. He was the backup to Romo. This move saved $1.1275 million this year, or we'll just say $1.2 million this year, and it saved $2.3 million next year. But Kyle Orton hadn't really shown up for camp. He wasn't sure he wanted to keep playing. With Romo's injury right now, as we were discussing before this, right now the first team reps are being taken by Brandon Whedon, formerly of the Cleveland Browns, and Caleb Haney has actually been taking the backup reps. So, I mean, you know, they're kind of moving on anyway, but, you know, what do you remember of Kyle Orton's playing?
Well, I mean, you know, he had limited time there in Dallas, and he jumped into a game after Romo got injured. He was facing, from my understanding, about $70,000 in fines this year just due to that situation of not participating in OTAs and minis and what have you. So with the overall monies being 3.25 for the next 2 years, it's just a base salary. It wasn't a monetary major hit against the Cowboys. They have two young backups there, and I think they're comfortable with that. I think they're making sure that they get those guys the proper reps now, so that when they get ready to start the season or as they go into preseason to evaluate them and then eventually start the season, they'll be very comfortable with what they have right now on the roster. And then also they can use that money later for other things.
Right. I mean, you know, that much money wouldn't have kept DeMarcus Ware on the roster, so to say. But, you know, maybe they can try to get a few cheaper options to help that defense that they have done nothing to really help in the offseason.
Absolutely. It gives them an opportunity to look at, you know, preseason guys that get released that were, you know, late-round picks and or free agents. And maybe, you know, that's enough money to hold them in there at a position if necessary.
Yep, and like I said, Cowboys have got some issues, and hopefully they can work those out, because to me their division's kind of wide open again this year. But as we honestly just stay right in their division, the team soon to be formerly known as the Redskins, I guess, you know, maybe they'll come up with a Prince symbol or something to be their logo, but they have announced that they're not going to sign linebacker Brian Aragbo to a long-term deal. Instead, he'll play on a one-year deal. What would make a team try to make this decision?
Well, you know, again, this young man is 28 years old. Again, that's not old when you're looking at football players, but at his position, he was very productive last year. He had 13 sacks. I think he has 39 sacks or close to 40 sacks with them now collectively over his career. But also you have to take that into consideration. With that being the case, what do they have behind him? What are they looking for to come out in the future as far as players that they're tracking in college right now? So I don't think that it's detrimental, but one of the things that I noticed that he made in a statement was that he felt that he didn't have to prove anything to the fans, to the organization, and even more important, to himself. But, again, that's a psychological way of keeping yourself boosted. That's what he should do as a player. However, the reality on the table is that it is a business, and obviously they see something else or don't see the value in it as of right now. They can now play the wait-and-see game, and if this year he can replicate his numbers or, again, surpass the numbers he had, maybe that makes a difference in them going and extending them some. But at this point, I don't know if Washington feels that that's the direction they want to go. Right now he's employed. The best thing he can do as a player is just go out and produce And then at that point, control the thing that you can do, and that's your productivity on the field, and let the rest of it, you know, just kind of work itself out.
Yeah, exactly. And as I mentioned before, I feel like Brian Aragbo will probably finish up his tenure in Washington this year, and he'll probably get a veteran minimum contract somewhere next year for a couple years here or there. The Cowboys could be a good fit just because they need a lot of help on defense, and he could be a good leader. They like to pick up veterans. The Patriots are known for it. You know, a lot of places he could go, but the best thing he can do is just try to have the most productive, healthy year this year in Washington and just see where it goes.
I agree. That he just needs to focus on football. I wouldn't allow myself as a player, if I'm in his position, to let that keep me from keeping myself employed. So that's just where it is. Just go do what you can do. Go out, be productive. Keep your resume full of the numbers that are necessary for you to be attracted to other organizations, and then just kind of go from there. Don't worry about it until after the season.
Right. And I guess some more happy news. Apparently, you know, Paul Werlow of the Falcons got married a week or so ago during the July 4th holidays. And Reggie Bush, the running back for the Lions, tied the knot as well over the weekend. Actually, he didn't even send out the picture that I saw. It was the other guy in the picture. I don't quite remember who it was. But you actually noticed the same thing about the picture that I did.
I did, Jeremy. I noticed that she being his bride, Mrs. Bush, and congratulations to Reggie Bush on his marriage, the newlyweds, that she bore a striking resemblance to Kim Kardashian. So I found that kind of interesting that when I saw the picture, I actually thought that maybe I was looking at a older picture of them. But again, she does look a lot like Miss Kardashian West. Let me correct myself with that.
Yeah, we definitely don't want Mr. West to get mad at us. He might interrupt our broadcast to tell us that another one's better or something.
Right, but nevertheless, congratulations to Mr. Bush and his wife.
Absolutely, and you know, we wish them the best on everything and wish the Lions the best on the season because, you know, they're starting to put some good things together there, so maybe they can get their push and go back to being a playoff team.
Absolutely.
Got a couple more things we do want to hit before we get into the Falcon Zone stuff. Former Vikings punter Chris Clue, I believe it's how you say it. If Chris, if I'm saying it wrong, I apologize. He plans to sue his former team for, quote, the coach's anti-gay remarks, unquote. Have you heard anything about this?
I did. I had an opportunity to look at it. There was an investigation that took place in 2012 in reference to this. My understanding is that former special teams coordinator, I'm not quite sure if he's still there, made some remarks, some harsh remarks, and this did not sit well with Mr. Clue. And as a result, an internal investigation was done by the NFL, and those findings were supposed to be released to the public. However, that did not take place. From my understanding, Mr. Clue wanted this to be opened up, this to be brought to the attention, this to be eradicated as a behavior. And the coach readily admitted that there were some comments made. I think what Mr. Clue was looking for was nothing in monetary value for himself. He was looking to support the community with a donation from the team for $1 million. And I think that's where it still rests right now. But again, they are moving forward. His attorney is moving forward aggressively in getting a copy of the report so that everything now is in black and white and they'll know how to proceed from that point forward.
Right. And Chris is actually quite active on Twitter, and he doesn't send shots out of people or anything like that, but he's usually very off the cuff and very straightforward in the way he does things. And to me, if he feels like he got slighted, then, you know, especially between the Michael Sam stuff and all the other things going on recently, this could be the perfect storm idea here to actually press this and get something done about it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's, you know, again, we have to wait and see how the NFL wants to handle it, from releasing the report to the team and how they will, you know, for the lack of better terms, damage control it. I think they're just waiting to see how they want to take the angle before pushing forward and releasing the actual report itself.
Right, exactly. And the last couple stories, one of them's kind of the no-brainer. It kind of reiterates the fact that sometimes we say things before the experts do, but the experts get credit for it. We'll go right into the Dick Vermeil, famously, great coach over the years, and I think he's done some work with ESPN as well. He says that John Gruden could make a successful NFL return. Now, if I'm not mistaken, a certain other person on this show said that a long time ago, and this is no disrespect to Dick Vermeil, but apparently he's subscribing to the show.
Well, I did mention that some time ago that Coach Gruden, I felt, would be making a return to the NFL. I think he's looking at the possibility of coming to some places. I've even predicted some places, but I will hold those back for a future opportunity to talk about them. But don't be too surprised within the next year and or two you will see Coach Gruden back on the sidelines.
Right, and as much as I would love to follow up and say where do you think he could go, you know, like you said, we're going to save that for a later time because, for one, we'd kind of like to hear a little bit more from the people we talk to before we, you know, press such information. But, you know, I guess while we're talking Gruden, we could jump into his brother in Washington. And, you know, if John Gruden were to come back, what would that do for Jay Gruden in Washington?
Well, I know Jay personally, and he's a competitor. What you will find in the NFL, if you notice, they're moving toward a trend of a lot of family members. They would not be the first set of brothers that are there. You have the Harbaughs that are there. You have Rex up in, who's also there in New York with the Jets. So you'll start to see these things play out. I think that what it does for Jay, it gives him an opportunity to just now have his brother there and they can have that conversation instead of being a, you know, former NFL coach right now talking to a sibling who's a current NFL head coach. It just gives them an opportunity to have that conversation even more because they're in the mix together.
Right, and I'd love to see the Gruden brothers coach against each other, but, I mean, I've never been shy about saying John Gruden's one of my favorite coaches of all time, at least in my lifetime. But, you know, speaking on the family members and the way that there's always a lot of family connections in the NFL, I was talking about some new recruits to the University of Tennessee on the SEC show last night, and it was Evan and I forgot his brother's name, and I apologize, but their last name was Barry. They were from Fairburn, Georgia, and they were going to Tennessee, to which me and my co-host on that show, Joe Pym, kind of thought out loud, I wonder if they're related to Eric Barry, who went to Tennessee, who's from Georgia, and who is in the NFL now. The update on that story is they are from the same place. We haven't been able to find the family tie yet, if it's his brothers or his cousins, but the fact that he's from around the Fairburn area and the fact that he went to Tennessee, there's a good chance that these are little brothers or little cousins that are going, and if they're even half as good as Eric, they're going to be quite good.
Well, it was a smart move on Tennessee if that's the case, and I think that is the case. I think there are, I think one is a younger brother, if I'm not mistaken. Again, don't hold me to it, and one is an actual cousin. So, again, they're just adding that depth of a family tradition and a name into Tennessee and, more importantly, to the SEC.
Well, I mean, you know, not to get off on the college tangent too much, but their coach, Butch Jones, as he goes into his second year, always does very well in recruiting, and especially on getting relatives of alumni to sign on to the, you know, to play with them. So, I mean, there's a very high chance that these guys are those relatives and that they're going to be just standouts like he was.
And Tennessee also is opening up the door to play a lot of young players. So I'm sure
right.
In that recruiting process that helped.
Right. Yeah, they got some issues. But, you know, once again, if you guys want to hear more about the in-depth Tennessee preview, you guys can check us out on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, all that, and you can listen to the SEC show. But as we get into our last story we want to get onto here, I had heard earlier this afternoon that Roger Goodell has been talking to the Oakland Raiders. you know, he probably talks to a lot of different teams, so I didn't think much of it until I kind of read part of the story. Apparently, he has informed the Raiders that they can either build a new stadium in Oakland or they can share a stadium with the 49ers. Have you heard anything about this?
I have, Jeremy. One of the things that I find interesting and quite intriguing about this particular story is that it's something that would not be new. If you take in consideration that you have the Lakers and the Clippers in basketball in L.A., if Oakland is in a position right now, I know that the team has wanted to do some different things, even possibly move out of Oakland. One of the advantages that they would have if they could share a stadium with the 49ers is the ability to take their time and do a little more research on whether or not building a new facility in Oakland will be able to sustain itself. They can kind of watch what Atlanta's going to do this year with their stadium and their situation, and it gives them a little leeway. So if they decide to move the team, if given permission to move it out of Oakland, and they're playing in San Francisco sharing that stadium, then that gives them the flexibility to move. But it also gives them the opportunity to not just immediately jump into trying to get bond referendums and what you need from a city to sustain a brand new stadium and to maintain it as well. So I think it would not be bad for them to look into the options, but the most important thing is that they have options.
Right. And, you know, just your personal opinion, do you think that Oakland would be the team to move to L.A.?
Well, you know, this has happened one time before. And, again, you have diehard Oakland fans. I don't know if L.A. Is the wise move. I'm not quite sure. You'd have to look at what it would take to maintain the estate of building a stadium there or finding some type of fix. Again, you know, they have to look at just what the fans, do they have enough fan support, and will the city quickly jump on trying to satisfy the needs of the organization so that they can stay in Oakland? That's going to be the biggest question. How much pushback do they get as they begin to look at and or start to discuss stadium deals? Are the players in place for that? Is the money in place for that? But more importantly, does the city want to embrace that?
Right. It kind of come off odd to me that the way the article was written was that Goodell was kind of telling them how it is as far as, you know, you're either going to do this or this. Does he kind of have the controlling vote or power on this to kind of decide who moves and who doesn't?
Well, he does have the power of being able to look at how teams can be relocated or where they stand. That's strictly based on, some very, very extensive research. So, you know, if he's coming, he being Commissioner Goodell, saying, hey, here's some options that we're placing on the table. You need to look at these options. Obviously, they have some things, or he has some things, or the committee has brought back some things or some evidence there that strongly supports them sharing the stadium and or looking at rebuilding before they can actually even look at a move. Going into a move is a lot more difficult because, again, you have to have the permission of the owners to vote on a move of a team. So, again, you know, maybe he's looking at what can be a quick fix versus a long-term political battle amongst the ownerships.
Right, and at least if they moved within the same state or even in the same area like that, you know, you wouldn't have to redivide the division lines.
Correct.
Well, anything you want to add to this before we journey through the tunnel to Falcon Zone?
No, I think everybody's itching for football now. A lot of the teams are getting ready to go into training camps. I'm wishing all of the players that go in a very successful camp, but more importantly, that they all come out healthy, and let's get ready for the fall.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a great time. And, oh, there is one thing I wanted to mention. We had broke the story that Chad Ochocinco Johnson was playing up in the CFL, and he actually caught his first touchdown the other day, to which everybody wanted to know what his big celebration was. Did you catch what it was?
No, sir, I didn't. I must admit I did not catch it.
He went and gave the referee a big bear hug.
He has most definitely calmed down since his NFL time.
Right. I was expecting maybe a Sharpie or something like that, because I was actually watching the game, and he caught the ball on about the 3, and fought off two defenders and fell into the end zone, and then immediately found the nearest ref and gave him a big bear hug, and the referee looked very confused by this.
I'm sure that that type of emotion and excitement they don't see as much in the CFL.
Yeah, probably not. He was probably kind of concerned about it. But, you know, that is going to do it for us for End Zone. We'll see you guys on the other side of the break with some Falcon Zone. We're actually going to have Reggie joining us. See you guys in a minute.
Hi, Jeremy the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Jeremy the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more.
Welcome to the Falcon Zone. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and by our resident Falcons expert, Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing great, Jeremy.
Yeah, we're doing good. It's great to have both you guys on. And before we get into some of tonight's topics, I do want to remind everybody that you can find us on our Facebook page, our Impact Media End Zone Facebook page. You can find us on our Twitter page at 3endzone. If you want to email the show at 3endzone@gmail.com, you can follow all of us on Twitter. And as I mentioned in the previous segment, we are now on iTunes. You can just search for either of our shows, and you'll find the entire library. You can pick and choose what you want, or you can hit the subscribe button and get them all at once. I recommend you do that, but maybe I'm a little biased with it. I wanted to start off with Harry Douglas has been a little busy lately. I guess he's kind of going Hollywood a little bit. He filmed a segment for the Play 60 clip. Have you guys seen this clip yet?
Yeah, I took a look at it a little bit earlier today. Yeah, I think he's getting into the Falcon mode now. And I think it's smart for him as well as some of these other players to take advantage of the fact that Hard Knocks is now getting ready to go viral. And it's a good opportunity to start maybe planning for that next phase after football.
Yeah, right. And sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. I agree with Reggie. Anytime that a player gets an opportunity to be able to market themselves is always a good thing.
Yeah, I was just going to say that what I found is kind of nice was that the Play 60 people from the NFL thing about trying to play at least 60 minutes a day, trying to get your kids outside and be active, is the fact that it was Harry Douglas that they picked and not, you know, Julio or Roddy. It wasn't Matt Ryan. It wasn't, it wasn't any of the other I guess, bigger names on the thing, but it's kind of the emerging wide receiver.
Well, Jeremy, Harry Douglas actually does quite a bit with the youth foundations in and around Atlanta. So I think it was actually kind of befitting. He spends quite a bit of time. I know he goes to the football camp that Roddy White hosts up in his hometown in South Carolina every year. And he also does a lot of stuff with Chuck Smith and some of these guys here locally as it relates to some of the kids. So I think it's actually befitting that he was the one that they chose because he's one that's always dealing with the children. So that hats off to him.
Well, Coach, from a coaching standpoint or even from an agent standpoint, either one really, is there a way to kind of get a player, you know, like if you're representing a player, is there a way to kind of encourage them to do this or a list you can get on?
Well, again, you're always looking for the best opportunity for your client. So, again, if this presents itself as an opportunity for him, you most definitely want to take it and use it to help strengthen even his own foundation. I'm sure most of the players in the NFL create a foundation for themselves. So, again, with him supporting the youth, using this opportunity, and most importantly, getting involved with youth football with Roddy White's camp gives him an opportunity and his agent an opportunity, again, just to show his ability to be marketable, not just with football, but in other things as it pertains to football.
And the other thing that kind of jumped out to me was the fact that for once there was some good news about a Falcons wide receiver. The past couple weeks haven't been exactly real kind to these guys, so it was kind of nice to see a positive swing on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Following the two deaths or the near death in Julio's case, yeah, that definitely can always use some good news out of that camp. We're going to need them this year.
Right, and this and the best thing is this is just more positive PR leading into the HBO Hard Knocks summer that's going to be in Atlanta. That's already kind of going. I believe it debuts August 5th. But, you know, this is just, you know, it's great to see the Falcons out in the community doing things. And the Play 60 thing is, to me, is one of the best things the NFL's come up with.
I agree. I like the Play 60. I think it gives an opportunity to show players outside of their uniforms and connecting with communities, more especially the youth.
And as we transition from one positive wide receiver bit of news to another, once again, thanks to social media, we were able to see a picture of Roddy White as he actually got to escort his mother down the aisle as she got married over the weekend.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. I remember when I first saw the photo, I thought it may have been Roddy that actually got married. So I've done a double take and actually read the caption again. And said, okay, he escorted his mom down the aisle. So it's actually a good thing, especially considering that family has already had to suffer the tremendous loss, as we know, you know, his brother, younger brother, being killed not too long ago. So it was good to see something joyous happening with that family after their tragedy. So yeah, I was surprised because initially I thought, oh my goodness, Randy's gotten married. Maybe he won't necessarily cut up as much as we think he will on Hard Knocks. But yeah, that was his mother.
Again, I would like to congratulate Roddy's mom on being married and having her son walking down the aisle.
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, as we said about Reggie Bush getting married last time and this time with Roddy White's mother. You know, congratulations on that. We wish you the best and everything. And yeah, I gotta agree with you, Reggie. When I first saw the picture, I was like, Roddy is getting married. I had thought maybe he was married, but apparently I'm not sure about that one either.
No, he hasn't. From my understanding, he hasn't quite tied the knot yet. But that's why I had to do a double take when it was actually his mother. Well, I actually got a chance to meet up in Miami when visiting the Miami game last year. Met his mom and his sister as we were entering the stadium, and she's a very pleasant woman to talk to. One of the nicer parents.
Well, that's definitely really cool. And I guess we'll get into actually the story I kind of wanted to hit on that I thought was cool, and I've kind of got some feelers back from Falcons fans, and some thought it was cool, some not, but, you know, regardless, it is our show, so we'll talk about it. The Falcons helped the Atlanta Braves outfielder Justin Upton with the All-Star game vote. He was one of the final five to get voted in for the last position, and internet votes counted, as well as you could go to the website. There was other ways you could vote. He actually finished third overall, but he was the top internet vote thanks to the Falcons, and I believe supermodel Kate Upton also gave him a plug on Twitter. So, you know, it was kind of nice to see the city of Atlanta kind of bond together, like we're all one sports town, you know, support everybody.
Right, that's actually one of the things that I've actually wanted to see a little bit more of, is where these teams to kind of get together and help each other, especially from a fan base. All of our fan bases kind of interact and intersect in a lot of ways. So I thought that was a really cool story myself, because you never really know how cool, how close these guys are. So that was a good. I'm glad you mentioned that and brought that up, because we all, have, some of us fans, are just as rabid for the Braves and for the Falcons as much as we are for the Hawks and whatever our new soccer team is going to be. So that was a really cool story.
I also like the fact that again with building a new facility, the Braves will be getting one in 2016 in Cobb County. All of this, again, speaks volumes to the continuity of Atlanta, and to be able to go out and support any of the professional athletes that are in our city and have the backing of other professionals just speaks volumes to the unity that's required, and it shows that the community of sports is working very well and working diligently to make sure that they support one another.
Yeah, and as you said, Reggie, we have no idea what the soccer team is going to be called, but, you know, it was nice to see. I believe the Hawks were blowing up social media as well with a push like this, but it would be nice to see all three of them really work together more, because it really is the same fan base, and the fan base is ready to embrace, you know, all the new changes and everything.
Yeah, I think I thought a lot about that at one point. And if you think back in the legacy days, when you had Ted Turner, who was the owner of two of those teams, and Rankin Smith was still the owner of the Falcons at the time, that was, I mean, again, the single owner concept is something that I've had a lot of conversations with people a lot about, particularly with the Hawks. Who has a group or an ownership group, and you don't get that personal touch that you get with, with the single fan or the single owner. So I think that had a lot to do with it as well, because obviously the Smiths and Ted Turner at the time were pretty close as far as families go. So they definitely fostered a little bit more of that. So I'm with you. Hopefully, you know, something like that. I know Arthur Blank had the opportunity or was pursuing the purchase of the Braves at one point from Liberty Media, which is a cable company out of Colorado that owns them. But it went away as quickly as it surfaced. So we'll see. Hopefully in the future, we'll see. We'll just have to keep doing it as a fan.
I also would like to add that, again, in the segment that we had prior to coming on the Falcon Zone, we talked about the power of social media, and this shows just how social media impacts the lives of everyone, and more especially sports fans, as well as the players themselves.
Yeah, it's. I guess it kind of, in a way, this will help segue into the next thing I was going to bring up, and that's the they have a big thing on the Atlanta Falcons website, and that's AtlantaFalcons.com. where you can go to the website for the new stadium, and you can get facts about being on the wait list, or you can join the wait list, and there's all these different details and screenshots and everything. You know, I guess we'll kind of split it up this way to kind of try to get all the takes on it. From a coaching front office perspective, Coach Hill, I'll get it from you, as to have the Falcons done enough to, I guess, to pique your interest enough to want to be on this waiting list? And then from you, Reggie, as the super Falcons expert and longtime fan, have they done enough to make you want to pay the money to get on the wait list?
I think that they have. I think there's still more work to be done. I think the one thing that's going to help them is once this Hard Knock series comes out, the Hard Knock series will most definitely give them an opportunity to bring more visibility to the team from an intimate standpoint, being able to hear from the players, being able to see through the growing process with all the young guys that they've drafted and brought in, and basically the retooling of this team. So I think that that's going to take them over the top. But right now, Mr. Blank and the organization most definitely have done a lot of things out here in the community and making themselves very visible. So I think that's part of that marketing strategy that moves fans into looking more seriously into the new facility and what that price tag is going to be on a fan to participate live in those games.
Yeah, I agree, Coach. From a fan's perspective, Jeremy, absolutely from a marketing perspective, they have definitely done as much as they can do. But, you know, you kind of got two fans here. I mean, obviously, you know, Atlanta is a melting pot of fans from all over the place. You know, a lot of people kind of migrated here, so you don't have the rabid fan base that you would in a Pittsburgh or Chicago or some of these other places, right? But winning is what's going to fill that stadium. I mean, at the end of the day, from a fan perspective, you've got your diehards like me who will be there regardless, but you definitely have some fans that, you know, they're in a wait-and-see mode. And even when you start talking about PSLs and the potential for PSLs, when you start reading some of the descriptions, and I don't know how much you guys have actually gotten into reading some of the descriptions, for instance, the stadium seating, which has the, you know, surround sound and it's rumored that when a player gets hit, the seat rattles and things of that nature. Those are the types of things that, you know, are going to draw fans regardless of who their team is, because those are just things that you don't see in any stadium. So if they follow through with what they have presented as far as what they're going to do with this stadium, I think they won't have an issue getting tickets sold. But as far as the longer-term fan, they're going to have to win some football games this year, and they're going to have to go a little bit deeper in the playoffs consistently. And I think if they do that over the next 2 years, they won't have a problem selling out.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of that oddball fan and kind of odd man out in this, that I don't know that they've necessarily done enough to pique my interest, but then again, I'm a pretty hard sell on anything. It's even hard for fast food people to add fries to my order. But yeah, like you guys are saying, it's a wait and see type deal, and in the next 2 years, if they can go back to consistently winning the way they were and building the team the way they were, I don't think it's going to be a problem. They're going to fill this thing up.
Well, you know what, Jeremy? One other thing to that, I actually had some conversation at one point with Drew Davis and with Jonathan Massaqua about some of this similar thing. A lot of fans that you talk to, because they can turn on the TV and see it, it's a little difficult for them to convince themselves to spend $100 or whatever it takes for the ticket price to actually be at the stadium. They can sit at home and read it. But I'll watch the game. But one of the things I kept stressing to these guys is adopt the Seattle Seahawks approach. You have fans who want to be interactive with their players, and when you come to a game and your players have their backs to the stands and they're not really interacting with the fans, there's no experience there. So if you provide that experience, then I think that would trump all, whether you're winning or losing. And I think Seattle has the blueprint, for they have a nice interaction, a nice mix between their players and their fans, and it really appears to be more of an experience than actually going to a football game. So I'm hoping that they catch wind with that and take that, and anybody else that could be listening, you know, take that to heart. That's one of the things when you talk to a lot of fans that they wish that there was more of, was more interaction with the players.
Yeah, definitely.
And
I know
Coach Hill is cringing there when I said that. I'm sorry, Coach.
No, it's okay. Yeah, and that's something I've said before, that a lot of times I felt like Atlanta teams in general aren't in the public or aren't available enough. And I understand their schedules are busy and you know, they have families and stuff like that. But a lot of times, you know, besides that grilling event a couple weeks ago I was able to go to, I couldn't really think of a time when you had access to even two or three Falcons at the same time without having to, like, run them down in an airport.
Right. And what I'm talking about is, because, I mean, of course they have busy lives. This is more as simple as when a young kid is on the sidelines and he's yelling your name, Roddy or Julio, you know, of course you can't turn around for 20,000 children that are yelling, but maybe once or twice. And, hey, how you doing? Or what's up? You know, that you'd be surprised what that does for not only that child, but for the parent. And, okay, you know what? Now this is an experience that I want to take part of all the time. I'll pay the money because, you know, there's that interaction. Those are the types of interactions I'm referring to, actually.
One of the things that I noticed that is taking place in Carolina is if you notice when Cam Newton normally scores or whatnot, he'll take a football to the back of the end zone. He'll find a child and give that football to. And he brings about that type of experience that you're speaking of, Reggie, in Carolina. I watched him do it a couple of times last season. So, again, as you're speaking of that experience, now that little kid that gets the ball from him, it says a lot because now other little kids want that same experience.
Well, absolutely. And you got to know as an agent, you know, these are things that if I put my agent's hat on, I would convince my players to do. Because believe it or not, especially in the world of social media and the involvement of social media, when it comes contract time, you know, your fan base can be the reason you stay or go in a lot of cases. Atlanta is still recovering from cutting John Abraham because the fan base was so rabid about that. So, I mean, again, those are the types of things that leave a long-lasting impression. And he has now become known for that because he's the only player in the league that does something like that. So those are the types of little nuances I think that the players can add, you know, short of winning it all. But they can add that to the experience and make that stadium, you know, a lot more sellable than what it may be based on what the price tag is going to look like.
Exactly. And one way that they're going to help get people to get on these waiting lists and to fill the stadium is special teams, which is the – I guess positions we're going to kind of hit and break down real quick and really don't have to spend a whole lot of time on them because there's not a lot of guesswork in a lot of them. But, you know, clearly the punter is Matt Bosher, and he's been, you know, a really good punter, honestly. I think he's top 10, top 12 in the league. Very rarely does he ever shank one or really, you know, really have a bad day.
Yeah, and one thing I like about Matt Bosch, he's not afraid to hit, too. He'll run down there and tackle somebody. So, yeah, I think he's pretty much got that position on lock. I like Matt Bosch. He's a really nice guy as well.
I think what I find interesting is the way that they have it set up. They have two kickers in, and then you have the punter as well. And I think him showing the ability to make those great punts, but then willing to go down and be a part of something special called special teams. He doesn't sit back and try to dodge the ability to try to help his team keep the opponents in the backup, as we call it. So he has to be careful with that, but it is also commendable that he's not afraid to go out and make a tackle versus a leg whip.
Yeah, I will never shy away from any kicker who tries to make a play. You got to be smart about it and not get hurt, but at the same time, If the kicker ever makes the play, makes the tackle, I love when they look at the other 10 guys on the field like, did I really have to save the day?
Yeah, that's always an interesting look.
And it also makes for great highlights.
Oh, yeah. And I guess real quick from a coaching standpoint, if your kicker has to make the play, do you chew out the other 10, or is there any kind of repercussion there, or do you just let him kind of give them the business?
No, I am livid if my kicker has to make the play. I have 10 other guys on the field who are equipped with the speed and the skill set to go down the field and should make those plays consistently. If it's getting out to the kicker, we have some serious issues that we have to discuss and cover in our next coaches meeting.
Right, and I bet there's a lot more laps and stadiums done the next day.
I can promise you it's not a good day for the special team coordinator nor the individuals that make up that unit.
But as we go from the punter to the kicker, clearly Matt Bryant, it's still his job. But, you know, Sergio Castillo is still on the roster. It's somebody they signed early on. And, Coach Hill, you actually hit on the fact that maybe he's a kicker and a punter, or that he can handle kickoffs or something like that is why he may still be on the roster.
Right. I mean, if you have two kickers on your roster, obviously one – Mr. Bryant has proven himself, and I think it will consistently still be his job coming out of the preseason games and going into week one. But again, having a backup kicker, it must be something there. Now, some of the uniqueness that you'll see is that you might find that Bryant might be more consistent as a lone kicker in the field goal game. Maybe he's, you know, more so out at 40 yards plus, whereas his other kicker might be a chip shot kicker. And again, it might be to rest his leg. It might be several different scenarios that play out and why you have the two kickers right now on the roster. I think once they get down to selecting who is going to make up the special team, they'll, you know, eventually someone has to go. But I think that maybe the backup kicker has the ability to do some of both, maybe some strong pun as well as some short range field goal, which will allow for them to have that person as a utility. And I think that the Falcons kind of experienced that one time before. I don't remember what season it was in, but I think they have a kicker who also had the responsibility of punting for a minute.
Yeah, that was when we had Michael Kanin, who's down in Tampa Bay, and signed that $16 million contract for 4 years. So, yeah, he was a dual guy.
Yeah,
you know,
but I mean,
justify why they did that.
Yeah, and as important as a kicker is, man, that Kanin deal is just ridiculously high, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's with the Tampa.
Yeah, and again, guys, I want to add to that. That's what's justifying his salary right now. Although it's a very inflated salary, when you have the ability to be able to kick and punt, they are saving a roster spot. And so, you know, the salary, if they just split it, the salary that he's getting, again, allows them to free up a roster spot, which is huge if you have a person that has that type of ability.
Right, right. Nah, I never thought about it in that perspective. So, yeah, that does make sense.
And then, of course, as far as I know, the kick returner and punt returner are Devin Hester, and I don't know that there's anybody that would threaten his actual starter role in that, because I believe that's the whole reason they got him. But, I mean, is there anybody on the roster that could take over those duties?
Not for the coin that they're playing Devin. If he's not going to be playing wide receiver, I think he needs to be kick returner and punt return, dual duty. I mean, who else better to do that than a guy that can take it to the house every time he touches it? So,
I agree, Reggie, that they brought him in specifically for those duties. I think that the only other person maybe on the roster right now that would be able to back him up would probably be Harry Douglas as far as special teams are concerned. But right now he is that guy. They brought him in for that sole purpose. And then, you know, again, playing a little bit with the offense, having him, you know, over there as well gives them the luxury of being able to get some different looks. But by far, I don't think anybody else on the roster is going to be taking on those duties, primarily beside Mr. Hester.
Right, and that's actually going to do it for us for this week. I appreciate you guys dropping by, and glad to have you on, Coach Hill and Reggie as well.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it.
Likewise. You're welcome.
And as always, you can find all of our works on our Facebook page, our Twitter handle. You can email the show. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio. And like we said, you can now find us on iTunes. So, you know, you could always download shows and listen to us while you work, because whistling's kind of annoying. But for Coach Hill and Reggie Walker, I am your host, Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.
All righty.
Take care.